Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us for our webinar today, Automating Color Management, Productivity That Counts. You know, every customer is unique, and they all have different types of jobs, but there's one constant, and that's that universal expectation that the color you produce will match their unique requirements every time. Now, delivering on that expectation takes more than just a single piece of software or a standalone technology. It really requires an integrated approach to color management, one that combines industry-leading digital technology, processes, and solutions that can help you delight your customers, produce more jobs, reduce your costs, and grow your business. Today, we're going to spend time focusing on how to automate that color management process. The objective is to educate you on techniques that will enable you to minimize the time and effort spent on manual tasks, such as taking color measurements and editing files in pre-press, while achieving those consistent and accurate results. As run lengths decrease, reducing the setup time is even more important than ever, and that makes reliable color a very valuable asset. So today, I'm delighted to be joined by two experts in the field. The first is one of my colleagues at InfoTrends, Stephanie Piracini, and she actually works in our Production Workflow and Customized Communications Group. The second is Jason O'Leary, and Jason is a color analyst at Merrill Corporation. Now, before we get started, what I would like to do is give you just a couple tips for enjoying today's webinar. First of all, if you're having any technical difficulties, please let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget below. If you've got a question for today's speakers, and we'll be taking them throughout the webinar, please just submit them using the Q&A box. I'll be monitoring it, and we'll ask the questions as they come in. Make sure that you disable pop-up blockers. And if you want to see what the console can do, click on the Tips for Attendees widget for a complete rundown. Now, today what I want to do is just spend a few minutes talking about why color automation is such an important facet for you and your company and why it gives you a competitive advantage in the marketplace. Stephanie's going to talk about software for automating color management, and then Jason's going to spend some time sharing with you Merrill's approach. We'll wrap up with a few recommendations and conclusions, and again, please keep those questions coming in throughout the webinar. You know, one of my favorite authors, executive speakers, writers is Peter Drucker. And he wrote a book called The Effective Executive. And what he said in that book was that one of the critical components is digital efficiency. And that's really mastering your domain. What you want to do is look at how to complete a process using the least resources in the shortest possible time. What he basically said in this book was that it's not that complicated. What you need to do is you need to carefully manage where and how you spend your time. You need to focus on the results that need to be achieved. You need to look at your capabilities and build on those strengths. And you need to concentrate on those things that will produce the greatest results. It means you need to focus on the right priorities. Well, a lot of that links with color management. And what you want to be able to do is make sure that you've automated those processes so that you've really structured your workplace and you can carefully manage where and how you spend your time. Now, running a digital color press without proper color management is no way to satisfy your customers and grow business. It's hard enough to get your customers to sign off on the perfect proof sheet, but matching every run to that approved sheet is the real challenge, and you need to be up for that every day. In today's market, it's table stakes. It's really essential for customer satisfaction. And what you want to make sure you're doing is automating that process so you spend a lot less time adjusting color and your operators are free to print more jobs. That equates to bottom line profitability. Now, when you talk about automating color, what you want to do is you want to minimize the time and effort spent on those repetitive tasks, such as taking color measurements and editing files in pre-press, while you achieve that accurate and consistent color that your customers expect. As run lengths decrease, reducing that setup time is more important than ever. You also want to make sure that you're applying excellent print quality and improved cost effectiveness to differentiate and build your business. Now, What we do every year at InfoTrends is we do a number of different annual forecasts and outlooks. This happens to be a slide from our U.S. Production Software Investment Outlook. And what you're seeing is that when you look at the priorities for workflow initiatives, what print service providers like yourselves are doing is looking at the importance of cross-training a staff, improving interaction via web-based systems. But the third most important priority was reducing the manual labor through making the right software investments. In addition to that, when you talk about the importance of software, there are a couple of critical areas. The first is that people want to use software to increase efficiency. And so they're upgrading the workflow, they're training. And then the second component is increased efficiency on niche applications or markets, several of which require outstanding color management. We also ask companies about bottlenecks to current that relate to customer interaction. And clearly, color management, well, not in the top five or six, it's definitely in the top 10. And so when you take a look at the overall concept around color management, what you've got to look at is three scenarios. The first is that in some instances, companies don't have conventional color management. What the result is that if I've got variations in operator skills or materials and environmental factors, I can have press output quality easily drift away from those optimum results. I can calibrate, and that generates more consistency, but not necessarily the same level of accuracy. And so manual or automated calibration is going to help me achieve more predictable results. But when I migrate to a world of automation and I've got tools available like on-press calibration and profiling, what I'll be able to do is do a much, much better job at matching approved proofs and previously printed jobs. And I think that's what everyone wants to achieve. Now, with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn over to Stephanie, and Stephanie's going to spend some time talking to you about some of those software tools that are available for automating color management. So, Stephanie, take it away.
Thank you, Barb. One of the great things about color management is that many of these functions can be automated. And as Barb said, automation saves time and money. There are quite a few challenges when it comes to implementing and automating color management, though. Some of these include lack of resources, which could include time, money, employees to actually do the work, lack of expertise to even know how to get started, lack of the appropriate tools or software solutions that actually help you enable these color management tasks. Matching multiple devices is a big problem, inconsistent materials that are used on the various devices, inconsistent results when manually color matching, which results from those different materials and devices, and also variations in what your customer actually expects and what they define as color can be a big problem. And many of these challenges may sound familiar as they tend to be barriers to other investments and changes, but when it comes to color management, you may be surprised as to what you already have access to within existing software and hardware. Some of the basic functions and techniques required for consistent color can be performed and even automated without additional investment. We spoke during the last webinar about device calibration and how important this is to ensure consistent color. Traditionally, for both digital and conventional print devices, this requires printing a standard set of color bars on the device to be calibrated. The printouts are then taken press side to be scanned and the data entered into the press for adjustment. Today's digital presses, however, are starting to include built-in or inline measurement devices that allow for calibration to be done automatically and in much less time than manually scanning. Another process we spoke about during the last webinar is profile conversions. Often applying color profiles is not something that is ideal to be done at the creative stage and or by the customer. So it's often done sometime between pre-press and printing. The act of converting color spaces by assigning profiles can be automated in a few different ways. The first example are batch processors. Batch processors can perform color conversions to a single, multiple, or folders full of files at the same time automatically. These solutions sit on a server rather than a single computer and are often placed just before the rip to assign profiles within print-ready files. Although they do also support a variety of different file types. The benefit to batch processing files is that it's much faster than opening up each customer file and manually applying the profile, especially for large files that take up quite a bit of time and computer memory to open. It can also minimize the chance of having the wrong profile applied by mistake. Some tools that fall within this category include Soft Color Automata and Server, as well as Color Science Queue Enhancer. But you may be more familiar with solutions known as PraxiSoft ICC Autoflow and Graytag Macbeth IQ, which are no longer sold, but you may already own. Many pre-press workflow solutions have included the ability to apply ICC profiles to customer files. It may be a default feature or an optional add-on module, but if you already own one of these tools, you may have the ability to enable automation of color conversion. Similar to batch processors, applying profiles at this stage prevents color conversion errors during the creative process, which is helpful when there are last-minute changes to the device used for printing. Another benefit of pre-press solutions is that they allow for post-flight normalization, meaning that if pre-flighting rejects a file based on the inclusion of RGB images, the workflow can automatically apply the appropriate profile. Using a pre-press workflow solution for automating color conversion is great if you already own one, but these solutions can also be costly. Some common pre-press solutions include Kodak Prinergy, Rampage, as well as Helios Image Server and PDF Handshake.
Hey, Steph, I do have a quick question for you. You mentioned the batch processors and then obviously pre-press solutions. Could you talk a little bit to the types of skills that people need to have in place to be successful with these?
You really don't need to have a lot more skills than what your pre-press person would already have. For a batch processor, it's just a matter of setup, and a lot of software solutions today have actually built in really good interfaces that walk you through how to set up some of this automation. For something like a pre-press workflow solution, you're probably already working with the vendor or some rep from the vendor who can help you set it up if you don't know where to look, and they can also point out different features that you may have but may not even realize. As we look at different software solutions in the printing industry, actually, we see quite a few print service providers only use a small fraction of the available features in these tools. So there's quite a bit that you can do even outside of color management that you may not even know about.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie.
Sure. So another option is to use device link profiles, which are actually one of seven profile classes defined by the ICC specification. Unlike a normal ICC profile, device link profiles do not describe an individual device, but instead include a combination of two or more device profiles. More specifically, these two profiles include a source and a destination profile, so it understands how to convert it. Device link profiles provide a number of benefits, including maintaining a 100% black during the color conversion as opposed to converting it to a four-color black. It can also preserve channel purity, which otherwise may cause things like scumming or the little black dots that show up in yellow backgrounds. And it also allows for the compensation of ink hues and wet trapping when curves are applied to adjust tone reproduction in images. There are a number of tools, specifically profiling tools, that actually allow you to create device link profiles. Just a few of them include Auris Press Matcher, Allwyn Link Profile Prepress, Basic Color Devil, and Left Dakota Linkolator. And there's many, many more. Lastly, profiles can be applied within the RIP, also known as the digital front end when tied to a digital device. Color conversions in RIP can occur in three different places. It can actually occur at the front end before the PostScript is interpreted, at the back end, once the PostScript is interpreted and a rasterized page image is created, which is what gets color managed and actually sent to the output device. But it can also be applied during the ripping process by the PostScript interpreter, either as PostScript color management or ICC-based in RIP color management. And there are two main reasons why it's actually best to convert in RIP. The first is that pretty much all printers have a RIP, and most have color management capabilities today. The second is that it's actually the safest place, and particular time in the workflow to apply color management and convert color spaces because it should be the last step before printing the file. So changes at this point tend to be pretty rare.
Hey, Steph, I got a quick question on this since we're talking about the RIP side of it from our audience, and it said, will this information apply to packages like the Fiery Color Profile for digital high-speed color copiers, and could you explain that a bit?
It absolutely would. So right within the EFI RIP, there's EFI actually has a number of different features in addition to be able to do color space conversions. There's different color correction features and photo editing features that they've built into those solutions. So while I don't have a full complete list of everything in here, it would definitely be worth spending some time either with your EFI rep or with even the press representative or at EFI Connect and have them walk you through all those different capabilities.
Great. Thanks, Steph.
So along those lines, as I mentioned, many RIPs are actually including a variety of color management capabilities. So for digital devices, this can be found in the digital front end, which you may know it's either going to be an EFI or a Creo underneath, but there are a lot of the different hardware vendors who are starting to create their own standalone solutions, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. So we actually recently did a study on digital front ends and asked print service providers where they most commonly perform certain production functions. And if you look at the functions that are performed in the RIP or digital front end itself, the top four are actually color related. So the majority of respondents actually reported that these key color management functions are performed in the RIP, and that includes color profiling and calibration, which makes sense for the device, proofing, ink optimization, and color correction and conversion, as we just talked about. In addition to color profiling, calibration, and color conversion, which we looked at on the previous slide, proofing and ink optimization are also managed in the digital front end. A question that comes up often is what digital front end technology is the best, especially for color management? So in the survey I just mentioned, we actually asked respondents to rank different features of their DFE on a scale from 1 to 5. A few of these you will notice relate to color management. For example, functionality / feature set and output quality and consistency would include some of those color management features. All of the digital front ends had variations in score and satisfaction, so there's not necessarily one right answer, especially since other factors such as press, paper, color management process, environment, and more can actually impact color consistency. Nevertheless, the top two reported reasons for why print service providers decide to switch their DFE are inconsistent color matching and inconsistent print output. And as you'll see on this slide, you'll see EFI and Creo are listed in here in red and yellow, but there's other vendors who have their specific DFEs as well.
Hey, Steph, I got another question that just came in for you. If the profile conversions are done at the RIP, does it cause a slower RIP time?
Not necessarily. Usually it depends on how many changes you're actually making to the file. If you're just converting color space, it may add a little time, but if it's a very large file, I don't think it would be noticeable. If you're making other changes like fixing trapping, if there's a lot of graphics that need special handling, then that might add additional time.
Great. Thank you.
So like last time, I wanted to give everyone some tips on how to get started using this information. So there are a few suggestions on how you can actually work towards automating some of these color management tasks. The first is to look at what steps you're currently manually doing to see what can actually be automated, especially the tasks like calibration and color conversions that tend to be very repetitive and need to occur anyways. Next, look at what technology is actually available for automating these tasks. If you have access to more than one, consider which one might actually be best for everyday color management tasks. For color conversions, InRIP is actually the safest place, as I mentioned. But if you prefer, prepress workflow solutions and batch processing tools can also perform these tasks. Lastly, evaluate other color management functions that are available to you in your digital front end that can help improve color consistency and address color issues to ensure quality color reproduction. And this helps to actually work with your particular vendor rep to make sure that you understand all of the capabilities that you may not have or may not recognize that you have access to. Now I'll turn the presentation over to Jason so he can share exactly how Merrill Corporation does color management.
Thank you, Stephanie. Hello, everyone. My name is Jason O'Leary, and as they said, I work at Merrill Corporation as a color analyst. So today I kind of want to take you through the Merrill process a little bit, tell you a little bit about our color management process, and then take you through the G7 methodology, which we use. And then I'll follow that up with just some common questions and issues that we see in the industry and maybe provide a couple of tips and tricks for that. So the first thing I want to talk about is specifically color management settings. So how do you really choose what you want to target to, basically? And on here, I just describe a little bit about the source profiles. I know Stephanie mentioned also device link profiles, which are very good as well. That's actually what we use at Merrill. But you also have to select a profile that you're going to be targeting to. So I have a couple common ones listed here. For CMYK, there's GRACL, which is the General Requirements and Applications for Commercial Offset Lithography. And then also the SWAP profile, which is specifications for web offset publications. And then on the RGB side, some of the more common ones out there are the Adobe 1998 and then the sRGB. Now, I have kind of a graphic here. It's a little crude off to the right-hand side. It just gives you an idea of where the CMYK and RGB color spaces line up and how they differ. You know, please keep in mind all of the different source profiles are going to be a little bit different to begin with. So your two CMYKs, GRACL will actually be bigger than SWAP. And for RGB, the Adobe 98 is actually going to be bigger than the sRGB. But this just kind of gives you a general idea of what those would look like. So the blue line here obviously would be CMYK. And then the black line behind it, the more triangular line, would be the RGB color space. So you can see RGB in most cases is actually quite a bit bigger than CMYK. And then also the yellow line, it indicates the Pantone. So there are Pantone colors, spot colors essentially, and that color space is even bigger than the CMYK or the RGB. The other color gamut to really keep in mind is the printer color gamut. All of your devices are going to have a color gamut, and what that is it's just all the colors the device is physically capable of producing. So even if you're running, let's say, CMYK as most traditional printers will do, you may not be able to physically produce a certain color on your device. Also for color management settings, in addition to the source profiles, we have different rendering intents that we can use. These are the four basic ones, and these are actually going to be kind of the industry definition of each of these. They do come in a variety, some of them, especially saturation and perceptual, do come in a variety of vendor flavors. So this is just, like I said, the industry definition, basically. And the first one we have is absolute color metric. And that's going to give you an exact output of the CLAB values. It's not going to have any impact on colors that are in gamut, and it's typically going to be used when trying to match to an exact color.
Hey, Jason, could you take me – you said CLAB values, and somebody wanted a clarity on what you mean as CLAB values.
Okay. Think of that gamut earlier. Here, I'll go back to the slide. Think of this color gamut as a three-dimensional object in space. Now, your lab values are actually going to be particular points in that 3D model. So that's really what you're mapping to. In the bottom left-hand corner here, your more saturated blues, let's say, like a, you know, if I was going to use a Pantone, like Pantone 280, for example, is a really dark, rich blue. That would be a point in space that has a particular CLAB value assigned to it for a certain color space.
Great, thank you.
Yep, you bet. Relative color metric is actually the same as absolute with the addition that it takes into account the white point of whatever substrate you're working on. Saturation is going to give you a more saturated look by moving in and out of gamut colors closer to the threshold. Now, that one you're typically going to use if you're printing, you know, charts, diagrams, bar graphs, anything you want to give a lot of pop to. And finally, perceptual. That's going to move out of gamut colors in gamut, but it may also distort colors that are already in gamut. You may use that when you're printing certain images, for instance. Now, as I mentioned, saturation and perceptual both can come in different vendor flavors, so I would suggest talking to your local vendor to make sure you have a clear understanding of what those rendering intents would do. So color profiling is kind of the next thing I want to talk about here. I know Stephanie, you know, covered most of this. I just want to touch on it briefly. So basically, it's fingerprinting, and it's creating a known color state for the device. Since each device is different, every profile is going to be different. One way you can think of it is every device is going to go to the same place, but they're all going to take a slightly different route to get there. And device maintenance is really important enough that I want to put it in here. Because before you create a profile, you really want to have the printer in a baseline state. Performing all required maintenance on the printer before building a profile is truly essential, and not doing so can have adverse effects on your profile.
Hey, Jason, I do have a question for you. So
sure.
You at Merrill have all kinds of different devices that are
color.
That
is correct, yes. Yep.
Traditional and digital. And so if I'm doing a run that I know is going to an offset press, and then I've got a short run version of that I know, you know, I've got, let's say I ran out of stock on a specific brochure and I just need 150 more. How do you manage that color across a traditional offset device and a digital device to make sure that it's consistent?
Okay, for that's where our device link profiles come in. As Stephanie mentioned, the DLPs are used when you're not targeting to just one particular profile on one particular device. It's kind of like vendor neutral. It allows you to really print, you know, in the offset world and the digital world and achieve a color that's, you know, reasonably close.
Okay. And so that's, if I want, I'm going to pick, if I want my Coca-Cola red on a digitally produced image versus a offset produced image, you can. What's your success rate in hitting that?
I would say we're pretty good. Some colors are not going to be achievable on digital devices, obviously, especially when you get more into like the Pantone colors. Let's say when you're looking at those brand colors, you know, on a typical offset device, you can load a can of ink that, you know, it is that PMS color. So that would probably be the area that we would struggle with the most.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So one question is, how often should a printer be profiled? And there are really a lot of variables to this question. It comes down to the type of device you have, whether it's offset or digital or toner or an inkjet device. The individual device, you can have the same model vary quite a bit from device to device. For example, we'll have one machine that stays, you know, within that we can keep a profile on for months at a time, or another one we might have to create a profile more often on it. The types of substrates can have an impact, color requirements, and then also vendor recommendations. Now, I wanted to put a number on here just to give you an idea, In my experience, and we do an average of about 3 months. Now, given the variables, it can last much longer than that. I've had toner devices last, you know, triple that without needing to recreate a new profile on it.
Okay. Another question for you, Jason,
sure.
And it relates to rips. And the question is, what RIP do you use to control inkjets for proofing?
That is a good question. Right
it's
now,
hard if you don't have an answer. I just came in and I thought we should ask it while we're talking about this.
No, it's funny you mention that. We are installing our first digital inkjet device today, actually. So.
Oh, okay. What RIP are you going to use to control it?
Yeah, I haven't gotten quite that far yet. So.
Okay.
I might have to follow that up on the next call, I think. I'll have an answer to that question. For the toner-based devices, we use the Xerox software, FreeFlow.
Okay.
So.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
No problem. So let's talk a little bit about color calibrations. So what is color calibrating? It's bringing the device back to a known state of the profile. What calibrations are going to do is it's going to compensate for slight color variations on the device. And Stephanie covered this, kind of the inline versus the offline calibrations and all the advantages that come with the inline calibrations. You're going to also save your operator time. They can walk away from the device and be doing other things while the device is running the calibration. It's also faster than having to go through and manually scan in color bars. And we have found it also to be more accurate. You know, you don't have any kind of handling issues or anything like that. So how often should a printer be color calibrated? Again, we have kind of the same list of variables here. So for my recommendation for digital toner devices is to make sure you calibrate at least once per day. What regular calibrations are going to do is going to allow you to preserve the integrity of your profile. So essentially, the more you calibrate, the more you do the maintenance, the less you'll have to profile. So let's kind of pull it all together and talk a little bit about the color management process as a whole. Now, first question is, where's the color controlled? Well, the color is controlled in a lot of areas. There's a lot of places that have an impact on color. The file, which gets sent to the printer, you got to take into account your printer maintenance that's going on, make sure that's being performed correctly. You have your color management settings. You have your printer profile. And then you have your daily calibration. So if any part of this puzzle is missing, that can give you color issues.
Hey, Jason, I do have another question that just came in. When you take a look at the color management process, what role does the vendor play in supporting you in this process?
The vendor plays a pretty important role. What we'll do is we'll have calls with the vendor, kind of talk to them about any kind of color issues that are going on that we're seeing, and we try to really work hand-in-hand with the vendor. And actually, that's the perfect time to talk about this slide, who controls the color, because as you can see, the vendor technician is one of the main points of color control in the process as well. In addition to that, you have the file designer, your color specialist, and your print operators. Now, I draw the lines here because you really need that communication happening between all of these folks in order to successfully manage the color. Barb, did that kind of answer it?
Yeah,
or?
It sure did. Thank you,
okay.
Jay.
No problem. So let's kind of segue into the G7 methodology. Merrill Corporation is qualified as a G7 master printer. So I want to talk a little bit about G7 versus Graco, kind of the differences between the two, because I know sometimes they'll be intermixed. So G7 is a calibration method that's used to achieve gray balance. The 7 in it represents red, green, and blue, RGB, and cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, CMYK. Graco is a target specification. The latest version is Graco 7, and it was released in 2006. So both G7 and Grackle are specifications, but they are not the same. One way to think of it is to think of Grackle as a target you're trying to reach, and G7 could be the method you're trying to use to get there. Now, G7 has become an industry-recognized specification, and it's being used more and more. Now, there are some reasons that Merrill decided to go with G7. These are kind of the benefits that we found with it. For one, it lowers costs. We've reduced the overall amount of our reprints. We've also reduced waste. It's given us higher color quality. It does this by giving us superior gray balance. We have quicker turn times. We can meet our SLAs, and we spend less time making manual adjustments. It's also given us greater consistency across runs, across devices, and also across vendors. You also get industry recognition. Your company name is included in the ID Alliance's G7 registry. And most importantly of all is customer satisfaction. That one cannot be underestimated.
I got another question for you, Jason. Do you get, if you get, for instance, a request for quotation for, let's say, some kind of a print job, understanding that we all like to be proactive and not get respond to RFQs, but if you do get an RFQ, have you found that that some level of either of G7 certification is mentioned in that, or what's the frequency on doing it? Do you know?
I couldn't give you an exact percent. I know it has come up before, though. So it's another nice thing to be able to tell, you know, your prospective clients that this is, you know, something else that we are qualified to do, and we are hitting a certain standard of color.
Okay. So you're using it as really a marketing advantage.
Correct. Yep, that as well.
Okay. Yep. Great.
Now, G7 does come with some limitations, though, that you should be aware of. It's not going to give you the perfect color, so you got to make sure to set your expectations to achieve realistic color. It's also not going to make an unstable device stable, so your preventive maintenance is still going to be necessary. It cannot fix any bad process controls, so you must continue to still profile and calibrate your printers. It's also not going to be able to compensate for a limited color gamut. G7 is not going to give you more colors, just more accurate colors. And it won't be able to fix bad file design. It could be bad color conversions prior to the rip, for example.
Hey, Jason, quick question on this one. One of the folks came in and asked, you know, greater color consistency across vendors. Does that mean that you only select vendors that are G7 certified?
No. What you can do is you can use this device link profile with a lot of different devices out there. A lot of different vendors out there will support device link profiles. So if you're targeting to the same specification, let's say, you can bring all of those devices closer together and get more print consistency throughout them.
Okay, and then another question on the G7 side. Are you having much luck getting your digital print devices to conform to G7 ID Alliance references?
We didn't have too much of a problem with it, actually. We got the certificate, I would say, 3 or 4 months ago. Basically, we worked with a really good G7 expert. When you go through the G7 process, you're actually going to have to, hire a G7 expert to kind of, you know, hold your hand through the process and kind of take you through that process and then submit the final output to ID Alliance for the certification.
Okay. And then you used, and I'm not trying to get you to backtrack here, but we have a little break here, you've got your color management process slide. What role does a designer play in terms of the art file for optimizing the printed output?
That can vary depending on the device you're working on. We've found little quirks here and there that are probably really going to vary on, you know, the type of RIP you're using, let's say. You know, if you're using the EFI or Creo. So that's why I think it's important to be able for, you know, the pre-press and creative teams to really work with, you know, someone who focuses on the print quality side of it to help bridge that gap between those two worlds.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Yep. So, print output verification. So, once you've done all the color management work, how do you know your output is correct? Well, what we'll typically do is print control strips and then scan to verify that the device is running within our predefined tolerances. Color verification is required for the G7 process. Now, to help with that, there are actually some certified G7 systems available out there. I think there's about five or six. Fujifilm, Heidelberg has one, Chromex, ColorGate, Allwyn. Now, I personally have worked with a couple of these softwares, and I think they're very good. Fujifilm ColorPath I've worked with, and also Chromex's Curve software. And both of those are really good if you're looking to achieve the G7. Now I just want to talk about some different tips and tricks to some more common questions that I've seen. And the first is, where in the process should color conversion be handled? As Stephanie pointed out earlier, there are a lot of places in the process that this can happen. It can take place in the native program, other software editors like Adobe, internal processes. Basically, the more conversions a file goes through, though, the greater margin for error there's going to be. During color conversions, you can always make the gamut smaller, but you cannot make it bigger. The safest place to do that conversion is at the rip. So I need to convert my file to a different file type. Is that going to affect the color? It can, yes. There are a wide variety of file types, and you may need to convert to a format that the printer can recognize. So make sure to check the properties of the conversion settings to verify if any color management is happening behind the scenes. Now, this is a really common question I see, and it's actually one that's kind of debated. I'm just going to give you my take on it, and, you know, you make your own decision. Should my files be CMYK or RGB? A little bit of background about these two color spaces. RGB is the additive color process. Combining red, green, and blue is going to create white. RGB is like your iPhone, if you're taking a photo, your monitor that you're looking at. CMYK is the subtractive color process. Combining cyan, magenta, and yellow will create black. Now, I put ideally on here because that's ideally what would happen. In the real world, it's going to give you kind of a brown color, which is why they add K into it to make it the rich black. So in my experience, CMYK will give you more predictable results. But the important thing to note is it's still going through a conversion process at the rip. So if you submit a CMYK file, it's still going to be converted before the printer prints it. RGB is going to have a larger color gamut. There's going to be more functionality within the file. And the majority of images are natively RGB. Now, back to the question, either process can work. However, the industry does seem to be leaning towards RGB due to the advantages of the wider color gamut and the greater file manipulation capability. So how do I manage color on different substrates? The world of four-color printing should really be referred to as five-color printing, since paper is really the first color in the process. And it plays such a critical part in color management. Now, one way you could handle it is to linearize all of your stocks. Now, depending on how many stocks you use, this may or may not be very realistic. Another way is to linearize your stocks by like type. For example, you could linearize all of your dull-coated covers and have them all share the same profile. The linearization process is going to vary by device. And your local vendor will likely have recommendations on linearizing as well. At the very least, I would linearize papers that are running any of your high-end color work. So, under what kind of conditions should I be viewing my output? We have viewing booths at Merrill, and I think they work very well. Lighting standards for viewing conditions do exist. It's called D50, and there are D50 certified bulbs that are available. The conditions of that light are meant to closely resemble natural sunlight. You also want to make sure you're in neutral colored surroundings as well, which is another reason why a viewing booth works good. So how do I handle spot colors for brand-specific work? Just a few things to keep in mind when you're printing spot colors. For example, Pantone uses 16 different colors when they build a PMS color. Your typical printer is going to be using 4 colors, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. So some spot colors may be outside of your device's color gamut, making a match impossible. Now, spot colors can be handled differently across vendors and devices, so you really want to make sure to consult with your vendor to get an understanding of how your equipment processes spot colors. So let's kind of pull it all together. Let's say your device has been profiled, it's calibrated, and it's printing within tolerance, but the client still doesn't like the output. So what's your next step? One of the uncontrolled variables in color management is human perception. Everyone sees color differently, and so will your customers. Now, for Merrill, there's two approaches to this, the easy way and the right way. The easy way is to make those color adjustments on the device on the fly. The advantages to this, it's quicker, it's straightforward, and there's a single point of control. Your disadvantages would be the loss in consistency, and it really doesn't fix the issue long term. The right way would be to make those color adjustments within the file. The advantages would be a one-time fix, and it's consistent. Your disadvantages, it's more time-consuming in the short term, and it could involve multiple departments. So in conclusion, we covered the color management process that Merrill uses, the G7 methodology, and tips and tricks for common issues and questions.
Okay. Now, I've got some questions for you, though, now, Jason.
Sure.
The first thing is not sure exactly how to ask this properly, but I'll try this. Is it better to brand in an RGB or a CMY color for use in online and offline media?
I would go probably RGB. Like I said, you'll have a bigger color gamut there, so you're going to have, you know, more colors available to you, essentially.
Okay. Now, the other question that I've got in is, when I get an RGB JPEG photo file from a photographer, what's the best place to convert to CMYK for print? This individual does them in Photoshop now, and he's got a DocuColor 252 profiled and calibrated. And his question is, should I do that in the RIP instead?
I would. That's how we do most of our color conversions. You know, the more, because it's like I stated earlier, it's still going to go through another conversion then. So if you do a conversion in, let's say, Photoshop, and then you send it to the printer, it's still going to go through another conversion on top of that. And generally when it does that, it's going to shrink the gamut even farther.
Okay. Now, the next question that I've got for you is, do you print at multiple plants, and how do you maintain color consistency if you're doing it across multiple plant locations?
Okay. With the color management tools that we have, using the device link profiles, we do daily scans, essentially, that get uploaded online, and we can go out and view those scans across facilities. So for example, we have three main print facilities in the United States. We have two in Minnesota, and then we have one in Ohio. I can go out online and actually view the scans of all three of our facilities to make sure every device is printing within the tolerances that we've established.
Okay. Now, the next question I've got is,
What's your take on expanding an offset gamut by adding additional colors, print units, in line? And does Merrill do this at all?
We have. I don't work too closely with the offset side. We do have some six-color devices, though. I don't see an issue with it. I think if you can do that, you know, the more color you can produce, you know, the better off you are, I think.
Okay. And then the next question, and this is kind of a bit of a challenge for you, is somebody came back after you answered one of the other questions about RGB, and they said, so you're saying to create print files as an RGB? And the comment was, this goes against everything graphic designers are taught in print. Could you respond to that?
Yes, I absolutely can. So I've been going to color classes for, you know, 5-6 years now, and it's been really interesting to see how the industry is kind of evolving. I can tell you the first color class I took, you know, 5 years ago, they said, you know, CMYK. We want everything in CMYK, and these are the reasons we want that. You know, the color classes you go to now, I hear the exact opposite. I hear RGB, and these are all the reasons we want to see RGB files now. So digital print continues to be, I consider digital print to be in its teenage years. It's still growing. It's still changing and evolving. So, you know, is the pendulum going to swing back the other way? I don't know. You know, it's hard to argue against RGB at this point, I think, just because of, you know, being able to produce more colors and having less conversions to deal with.
Okay.
But
and
I,
then actually, I'm just curious if I have a second, Barb.
Sure.
So, I mean, you're talking about the designer submitting an RGB file, right? So wouldn't that benefit also be you have the wider color gamut before you're converting it at the press?
Absolutely.
That's the main reason, right?
Yep.
Okay. Because I know when I was, you know, in school back in the day, you know, a lot of the designers would convert the files. They'd convert them wrong, and it actually causes more problems for the printer to have to go back and get the right files. You're going through a lot of different people.
Okay. And I have one last question for you, and then I've got a couple of wrap-up slides here. But the other question I've got is, what happens if your printer isn't G7 certified? Do you tell them to find another print service provider?
Most digital printers out there should be able to hit the qualification for G7. You know, I've been touring a bunch of different facilities and looking at a lot of digital devices out there, and pretty much everything I've looked at, from Xerox to Osei to Ricoh, you know, InfoPrint, their machines are well within the boundaries to hit within those specifications. So,
okay.
But it is something good to ask the vendor if you are looking at doing that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap up with just a couple of final thoughts, and I want to thank both Jason and Stephanie. But we started out with the concept of digital efficiency, and it's mastering your domain and completing a process using as few resources in the shortest possible time. And I think what you heard from both Jason and Stephanie today was that you can do that when it applies to color management. And what you really want to do is make sure that you're matching the design intent across multiple devices. In some instances, you've got reprints over time, and you may wind up producing those on different technology. So it's really having the right processes, procedures, and automation capability in place. And so the last thing I would just wrap up and tell you is that we want to thank our sponsors, Xerox. And what Xerox has done is they've tried to make and offer a series of solutions that they call Confident Color. It blends technology, consultative expertise, business development, innovation, and custom solutions with what they look at as their automated quality color control systems. And it ranges from everything from an inline spectrophotometer to a series of software tools that can help you consistently manage color. And with that, what I would tell everybody is that we've got one remaining webinar on color management and automation. We're going to talk about how you actually
lead this into profitability for your business, and that's scheduled August 27th. And with that, what I would like to tell everybody is if you take a minute, we'd appreciate if you'd fill out a survey on today's webinar. We'd again like to thank our sponsor, Xerox, and you can fill out that survey at this attached link. And so with that, I'd like to again thank Stephanie and Jason, and guys, have a great rest of the day. Take care.